Okay, I think we are ready and on our way to dive into the very exciting world of industrial coffee makers. And without further ado, I give the stage to you guys.
Sind die Mikros an?
Ich gucke zu. Gib mir mal den Gerät. Hat er ein Power is on, Mute ist jetzt off.
Versuch's nochmal. 1, 2, 3.
Die Mute-Lampe ist aus, okay.
1, 2, 3, jawohl.
Alles klar.
Wunderbar.
Okay. Have fun.
Well then, welcome to our talk Unexpected Coffee, a dive into industrial coffee machines. I'm Hetty, I'm doing offensive security at daytime, and at nighttime I'm doing industrial coffee machine hacking and other fun projects. And that's DataCop.
Hi, I'm Clemens, or DataCop, or Data for short. And I'm an electrical engineer, but mainly doing networks and embedded Linux systems, and yeah. And that's the car. But if that's fine with you, we will just go on. So first things first, what's a coffee machine or what's an espresso machine? We have coffee beans, we ground the beans, and then we add basically just hot water under pressure, and then we have good coffee if we did it right. And then what's a vending machine? And there are different types of vending machines. There are basically two base types, and one is there are those instant beverage machines, where you just get a cup and you press a button and you get something that was made from water, more or less. But typically, it's just powder. And there are the other vending machines, like stuff in boxes or vending machines for bottles and so on. We won't go into this detail, but that's for the first part and what we actually have here. And then what's an espresso vending machine? And that's more or less a hybrid of an espresso machine and a typical powder-based vending machine. And that means we have the best and the worst of both worlds, actually. We have not really a perfect coffee brewery, and then we also have those powder things and not really milk or anything. But they exist, and they're quite huge, usually. And they allow special combinations like latte macchiato, which I will go in a bit in a detail on how this is made actually here in a few slides. And then basic stuff. In this machine, we have coffee and we have toppings. So for the coffee, we have a brewer that will be on the next slide also, and we will open the machine later too. And that one is designed for more or less a specific high throughput, especially for office.
Like 300 coffees per day.
Yeah, and also for low maintenance. So these machines typically don't need daily maintenance like big espresso machines, but those are more or less, I think you should clean them once a week, but that's just a quick cleaning cycle, and then the large cleaning cycle, if I remember it correctly, it's done more or less once per month, and typically not by the company where this machine is standing, but by a separate company that's also supplying the coffee and all the ingredients. Those machines typically have fixed water installations. That's why we have a pump here and an external water tank. And luckily, this machine in the manual has a note that says, if you don't have fixed water, by the way, the water input valve has a rating, so you can hook up a pump there with 24 volts and 1.5 amps max, which was quite nice for the camp.
Or you can also buy an add-on for it. There is also add-on with a big tank, and you can buy it from the vendor too.
There are also different add-ons you can put on the side and so on. So it's like buying a car, more or less. You can have all kinds of customizations. And then, we have fixed water, we have coffee beans, and milk. It's usually just supplied as milk powder, and those are toppings. There are different types. There are also vegan types, and this machine currently is filled completely with vegan toppings. And to actually mix the powder with the hot water, we have, or inside there are some mixer wheels, more or less. So you can see here on the left, or not really well, but we will see it later in the machine. On the left, there is the coffee brewer, more or less. Please don't break any stuff. In the middle, we have more or less the closed mixer. So from the top, the toppings will drop in and will be mixed inside of this bowl with water. And on the right, there is basically a second one, but that's just a mixer wheel. So that's the opened mixer, and that mixer makes the mixture creamy and mixes the water with the topping so you don't have crumbs in it. And you can also run the motor at different speed. For example, for the latte macchiato I mentioned earlier, latte macchiato typically is, or for these machines, is milk. In the middle, it's coffee, and then it's milk again. And the machine actually makes this differently. It does two pieces of milk and then the coffee on top. And this works because the milk is mixed at different speeds of the mixer. So they have different physical properties, so that the coffee will actually be in a layer between the two milk layers, although the milk powder is exactly the same. So that's quite interesting. It's how those vendors come up with quite a few hacks on how to do premium coffee things and so on. And this is the whole machine, how it was also set up at Lavantville, inside of the camp area, in the MetaLab dome, and it will be later set up again there. So if you want a coffee or some cocoa, feel free to go there and use the machine. But you can see here, we have three of those white containers where the powder toppings are inside there, and those have a motor that will basically put in the powder into the mixer bowls. And about this machine, this is the company is called Rea Vendors. It's a quite large company, and it seems to be initially located in Italy. And the machine itself is called La Rea Grande T, and then some, we don't know what they what the rest actually means, but there are different types of this machine. Last year at MetaLab, we got a mail from somebody who said that they have at their office this machine, and it's broken since a year. And they want to get rid of it, and if we would be interested in repairing it or doing some other stuff with it. They didn't want to just throw it away, but to maybe give it to people who repurpose it or repair it. And we both saw the mail and wrote to each other like, coffee machine, and in the worst case, we can always build a coffee bot out of it,
a cocktail bot,
yeah, for the Robo Exotica. And the initial error was that the brewer motor failed initializing, and for the brewer motor is, if we go back to the picture, if you have the brewer on the left, you see that there is a piston inside, and this piston is moved, or the whole brewing chamber is moved for like 15 to 20 centimeters for the whole mechanism to work.
So just before repairing it, it was standing around the MetaLab or hack space for like 3 or 4 months, and it annoyed quite some members because we don't have so much space. But in the end, we were motivated to take our time and repair it. And so we're gonna show you now the repair process, how we debugged it, and how we managed to repair it.
Okay, so the company or the people we got it from already said that they think it is probably a MOSFET power driver problem for the motor. So we were debugging a bit of the electronics, and that's the board on the in the back of the machine. So there are several boards. We will go into the different boards in the slides too in a bit. But there is one main board, and that's in the back, and there is all the power electronics there, and all the motors are connected to this. And there were the bigger MOSFETs we suspected at first. So
that was also the information we got from the people that they assumed that they are broken.
Yeah, but they tried to order them the electronics, and it's actually this data sheet. There are some automotive MOSFETs, and that's a bit interesting. Most of the electronics is actually automotive grade. We don't know why, but
endurance and
coffee is critical infrastructure. So that was our first try, and they tried to order them, but they are not complying with the Aero HS directive of the EU. So they're not lead free, so you can't get them at Mauser or any other electronics company anymore. But
AliExpress for the win.
Yeah, that was really like 5 seconds of search, and we found a bunch of them. It turned out those MOSFETs weren't the problem. So we swapped them. They're actually new inside there now, but those were not the actual problem. So we further debugged the motor itself. There is a PCB on top of the motor, and a magnetic wheel. So when the motor turns, there is a turn signal, or there is a tachometer signal back to the main PCB that tells the microcontroller how far it has moved. And also with current sensing, basically the microcontroller can sense how much pressure the motor is currently applying to the whole brewing unit. And we thought maybe these sensors are actually at fault. So we took a larger oscilloscope for no reason, and a power supply, but those were actually working quite nice. And then since the machine needs water,
we need to go to the kitchen.
We had to set up the whole thing in the kitchen, yes, including the oscilloscope, and annoyed more people. So what we actually did there is we did a bit of tracing on the PCB where the motor lines are actually, or the motor connections are actually going to. And it turned out they are split for high and low side into two chips. And one of those chips, yeah. So on the left, you can see there is this larger chip right next to the blue capacitor, and there are two chips right below it. And it's quite interesting. Those are for completely different motors. And we think they did it this way because the upper chip does very well power sensing, so you can get an analog value out of the chip for each output, how much watts basically are going out to the motor. And the lower chips are the lower side of the motor controller that basically just control the negative side of the depending on how you turn the motor. And those are can actually also do current sensing, and they're not just standard MOSFETs. They have some kind of electronics inside of there, so you can break them a bit more difficult. And also on the input pin, you can actually do power sensing. So if you supply a logic value to the input pin to actually to switch through the MOSFET or to switch the MOSFET, and the MOSFET goes into power limiting, it will try to lower the voltage on its input pin, depending on how much overcurrent it is currently having. So this was not implemented on the board, but those are quite interesting features of those MOSFETs.
So
and also again AliExpress. And then,
after Clemens did the soldering, we started to pray for the first boot again, and yeah, we had our first success. We had got the first coffee out of the machine, but it was Café Schwarz, and it was really black, and we didn't want it to risk a subscription for the toilet.
Because the machine wasn't clean for like
1 or 2 years. So we started the cleaning process. So we cleaned the whole machine. And we brought you some pictures of the cleaning process. And it was quite dirty. And after that, the machine was like new. And the good thing is
the company that produced the machines offers...
The machine that produces the machine offers a really good manual how to disassemble the parts and everything, so it was quite easy to disassemble it and assemble it again. And so we had a clean machine, and as next we're going to show you some more parts of the electronics.
Okay. Thanks. Okay, so... there are actually three bigger PCBs inside. One is the one we showed before. That's the main PCB in the back that basically has most of the power stuff. And then in the front, we have a touch display. And that one was really interesting when we opened the machine the first time because we saw that that's an ARM IMX6 processor, so it's running pretty... we were pretty sure it's running Linux. And also, there is an SD card inside. And it has some USB and a gigabit Ethernet port. That's everything of this is not used. So you can use the USB port to program the machine. But this also seems to be added later, or was added later. The second or the third PCB is... real power PCB because there is no typical boiler inside of this machine. It has an induction boiler, so it can basically vary. It can basically change the temperature of the water on the fly. So when it's currently running, it's not heating the water. If you press a button or if you want a beverage, it's basically heating the water on the fly and not taking too much energy. And also it's quite interesting, you can program different water temperatures for the different outlets, and depending when they are switched over the valves, you can get a mixture of different water temperatures, which is I think quite unique for this machine. And also for repairing or for taking it apart, those machines are typically really big, so there is a lot of space inside. You can more or less take the whole machine apart. You can replace everything. You can really maintain the machine quite well. So compared to those cheap plastic machines, also that are sometimes on smaller offices. These machines can basically live forever if you have enough supply of a few things that might break, like the valves or so on, but they're all standard valves.
Well then, let's check out the software hardware setup. So as said, Clarence already said, we have two components there. There is like this. There is a CPU inside. It's like a microcontroller, 16-bit industrial, or coffee processing unit. And there is a GPU. It's an IMX6 ARM Linux board. And on this Linux system, there is a Qt binary running with displaying the RIA GUI on the display. The RIA GUI is a HTML JavaScript-based web application. And
you can run it in your browser, actually. It doesn't make coffee, but it says it does.
And there is a RIA boot exe file. So you have an exe file, you have an ARM CPU, and you have a Linux running. What? Let's solve the mystery. It's a .NET binary for flashing configuration files and extracting configurations, and it's run with Mono on the Linux ARM processor.
Well, it works.
It works. And when you put in a flash drive with a specific folder structure, it boots this tool to put the config on it or to get the config. And I must say, I still don't understand how the boot procedure still works, because you have the Qt binary and the config binary, and I'm still not sure how they know when to start what. I tried to find it, I didn't manage to find it in the system. So you have also a Windows tool to program it. It looks like this. It's let's say last century, more or less. The red picture down there is also animated. Also quite nice.
I'm sure that was a feature request.
But I must say, even though the UX is quite questionable, it is super powerful for configuration like this. You can really make power-saving menus. You can make happy hours. You have a lot of configuration options for the machine. It's super nice. But yeah, the interface is quite interesting, let's say it like that. But let's get on the programming on the machine part. So there is a programming menu on the machine itself, a touchscreen. It looks like this. You see different buttons. It doesn't look very comfortable to use. And I will come back later to this part, why and what. Let's first also check out the web app.
If you press the manual online button, it will actually display the PDF of the manual of the machine from the SD card on the TFT display. And you can scroll through it. It's quite nice, but it's also a bit annoying to scroll. I think there are a few hundred pages.
So there is this web app. It's an HTML page. And when you're on the menu, you can choose the beverage in the end, and there is like a page menu HTML where the beverage is shown. And if you choose a beverage, you come to a page confirm page, and they have like the selector is like the parameter what coffee or cacao you want. And if you press the confirmation one, it goes to another HTML page, and when you confirm it, there is this Qt binary. As far as I understand the process, it will check the URL with the parameter and will know what coffee or beverage it will make. And when it's done, it will change the URL again in the binary that you come to the done page and it will switch back to the menu.
So the API between the web page and the Qt binary is actually the URL parameters.
So the Qt binary manages the whole HTML in the back in the end and shows it there. Let's show you some excerpt from the JavaScript files that we found. So that's how it's implemented on the JavaScript. The whole thing are like arrays in JavaScript, and they have a name and a picture path, and you can change the names, you can change the pictures, and it's also quite interesting one. Even more interesting is the JavaScript for the prices. Like every array part is one of the beverage with the price in cents. But
I'm not even sure if the machine knows what currency it's running on. So
seems so that there is no currency logic behind it. But I was digging into binary.
The really interesting thing is when starting it up, it actually it updates those files.
The binary updates those files, but I will show you now what. So I was digging a Qt binary with Ghidra, and I found this function in there. It's called generate JavaScript prices and availability. And let's see what this means. So there is code that generates the JavaScript down there from the binary.
From text, more or less. Yeah.
From text. So the binary generates the JavaScript file in the end, because the config is on the machine and not on the HTML files and JavaScript files. So next, we also check the communication between the machine and the front end, more or less.
Yeah, so between the Linux system in the front and the 16-bit processor in the back, there is a serial port. And we already saw in the Linux system that it's opening the a TTY on the IMX board, more or less, and then just found strace in the system, and we're like, okay, easy task, let's try this out, and found that so you can see dark red and dark green lines here, and one line per, or they just one is sent to the machine or to the controller, one comes from the machine. The red line comes from the controller in the back, and the green line is sent to the controller from the front Linux system, and it's roughly every second. And if you don't do anything here, more or less the binary command that's, or the binary message that's sent from the Linux system is more or less always the same. The red messages are interesting because in the middle there is this text that the machine displays in the lower half of the machine, so, or the display displays in the lower half of the machine. And it has a quite weird encoding because if you see in the top here, there is in German for this trace, füllt Wasser auf, bitte warten. And between auf, between the two words auf and bitte, there is no space, there is no character, no anything between there. And that was quite weird for us. And also, there was a weird break on the display too. So there was like a space between the two words, but it was not just a regular white space. So more information about it. It's a binary protocol. So the first part is always binary, and the last part is always a binary code. And also the commands that are sent from the touch display to the back are some binary messages, and those texts with a missing space in the middle. When debugging this, or let's see, let's look at it here. When counting the characters, we always found that the whole text is 32 characters long, and the middle part where there is no space is always 16 characters. Or add 16 characters. And who did a bit more of electronics probably already knows where the software comes from.
We're like, okay, And then we realized in the end there is this character display. Shout out to Wendy for the photo box in the binary kitchen tent. And in the end, the text is usually shown on such a character display, and they in the end only use this display to show the characters instead to implement a proper software for it, because the older machines only have these buttons and a character display in the end.
So the buttons you saw on the touch display for the programming menu, probably on a previous version of this machine, those were actually real buttons. And the texts are sent for those 16 characters by two lines, so 32 characters displays you have in this really old vending machines. And probably the whole back of the machine still thinks that it's some kind of machine that has physical buttons.
And no touch display.
And for a block diagram, so those are the three PCBs. We have the heater board, we have the CPU and power board, and the Linux board that's connected over serial. And everything that is part of the machine, even payment and some kind of modem you can plug in, is connected to the 16-bit controller. So what is a bit frustrating, because we are hoping to do more hacking from the Linux system, but we have to deal with the 16-bit controller.
So it's super hard you need to reverse engineer every option in the end to implement the same binary protocol to configure the whole machine and work with it. It's quite a tedious task in the end.
Next.
And then let's get to our lessons learned. Always verify claims if someone makes them, because sometimes they are not correct. AliExpress sells you automotive chips that you don't get in Europe or in Austria. Especially, the only problem in Austria is we have real luck, because in Austria it's a new law that you can't get easy stuff anymore because of some packaging directive. And we are really lucky, because it was from the 1st of January 2023 in charge, and we ordered it like in December and got it before that. Really lucky for us.
I think we actually got it in January.
But still delivered.
But currently AliExpress doesn't deliver to Austria.
Or not a lot.
Most of AliExpress sellers.
As you see, industrial equipment is state-of-the-art legacy. It was a little bit heartbreaking for us to see the reality that we deal with. And one interesting thing is also the Windows configuration software is not publicly available, and we currently don't have the latest version, and we can't use it for the coffee machine configuration currently.
So this machine is built in 2017, so quite new actually. I think those machine types were introduced around 2015 or 16, and the screenshot we showed from the Windows tool, I think, was 1 year before this machine appeared. And if you look very long in the internet, and we spent several hours looking for stuff on these machines, you can find it on some shady download grabber portals or whatever. But we still haven't found a version where we can actually program this machine. It's possible to program it over the touch display, but you can take hours just for a single beverage.
So there's also some possible future work in this regard. So there's also more possibilities for software analysis. We would like to obtain the programming software. So if someone has something lying around, we would be happy to talk with you.
Or if you know somebody who knows somebody who works at a coffee vending company, maybe.
I still want to understand how the boot procedure works, because there are two different binaries, and I couldn't trace how they know if the flash drive is plugged in and everything. It's still an ongoing research for me. So if you want to help out or interesting more for a machine, talk to us, ping us. And we have two more interesting things.
So there is RFC 2324. Who knows it? Who has read it? Okay, quite a lot of people. I was playing around since a few years to actually implement it on a coffee machine. And then this machine came around, and I said, hey, finally, a machine that could run it, but it turns out it's a bit more difficult. And actually, while working on the machine and looking at the RFC, the coffee pot control protocol is really just more or less for coffee pots, so classic coffee pots. Espresso machines, it's difficult. Also, this machine can do also can make tea with tea powder, and I've heard there is a specific type that it's not too bad. And also, this one can actually also do soup. So there is soup powder. We don't have anything. We don't have tea. We don't have soup. But because typically you have to take like 10 kilos of it, and we don't want to risk to have 10 kilos of soup for this machine lying around. And maybe a new RFC extension for the coffee pot control protocol is needed for coffee pots and not teapots for those machines too.
At least we have also crème brûlée as a powder flavor.
Yeah, we have crème brûlée.
It's quite tasty if you don't have too much powder in your coffee mug.
Yeah, it's it was a bit difficult to find the right dosage.
Well, and there's of course the last question that Aaron wants to know: does it run Doom? And well, I can say it can. Let's check it out.
There is actually a safety switch here so that you can't operate the machine when it's turned on, but you have to operate the machine when it's turned on to program it. So there is an anti-safety key here that is here in the machine for maintenance. And it actually completely switches off the power. And programming the machines, there is a button inside of here, or actually two buttons. I'm not sure they do the same. I'm not sure why they put in two buttons, but I think this plastic presses on the first button, and if you press it for a second, then it will go into the program mode.
I'm still waiting until our management Wi-Fi hotspot turns on. It's in the machine inside. We added it. So I can SSH into the machine.
And so even though the serial protocol is quite weird and the setup is quite weird, I think they're actually quite nice machines. I think it's more of a management issue of the project that it turned out like this. Because you could do a lot more with those electronics. And that's actually, the board here is custom, but there is a system on a board here that's from Verisight. So that's a vendor that supplies you with ARM Linux boards where you can just run software. And I think it's even running some kind of Debian they publish on the site probably. On the website probably a few years ago. You have an Ethernet port here, and there was no root password or anything because, yeah, if you have the machine open, you can do whatever you like. And the rootfs is completely on the SD card, so that's actually quite nice for swapping out the logos or trying out things. You don't have to flash anything. So it has a touch display, so it had to be done, or it has a display, so it had to be done. We're running just frame buffer Doom, although the machine itself is running X11, which is fine. We already before we started to look into the serial protocol and the software, we thought like we could actually integrate those two parts, that you can either switch between coffee mode and Doom mode, or actually implement a few things in Doom where the coffee you get depends on your Doom points. And if you die just at the beginning, you will just get hot water. But that's still to do.
Oh, I need to kill the X11 search.
So a bit of information on the machine itself. All of those containers you can actually take out. So that's more or less empty currently, for example. You can just take this out. The motor plugs in into the rear here and operates the mechanism for the powder. And it should also fit again. Ah, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Our demo failed. I'm very sorry. You can come to the village and we'll show it to you. We're going to fix it.
Thank you very much for your presentation. We are out of time, but since you are so, maybe tell everyone where exactly can they find you?
We are more or less at the MetaLab or Lavendville Village.
That's it's on the Manchester village.
The village with the largest or the longest name, and it's the silver or white dome. Basically right next to Chaos West. I think Chaos West probably is known by everybody.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.